From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This, from Boston, where just before Thanksgiving, the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant in Plymouth will reach a historic milestone. All of the radioactive fuel that generated electricity and intense controversy for half a century will finally be removed from the reactor building and stored outside in a special steel and cement cask. It will be a rare occasion celebrated by both supporters and opponents of the plant, but concerns continue about the long-term safety of the radioactive waste. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman recently toured the shuttered plant and reported on Pilgrim's decommissioning process. He's with us now. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, Arun.
It's great to have you because I'm been following the story over the years, and you've been inside the Pilgrim plant several times now over the years. Tell us about how it's different now. What does it look like?
Well, first of all, it shut down 2 years ago, so they're not producing energy anymore, but it's much different. The landscape has changed. A lot of buildings have been demolished. Gone is the 300-foot-tall candy cane emission tower. That was taken down. But, you know, there's still armed guards in watchtowers and fences with barbed wires, a lot of surveillance cameras, and you're still double-checked and inspected and monitored in order to get into the inner sanctum, which is the floor of the reactor. I went there with David Noyes. He knows Pilgrim inside and out. He's worked there for 32 years, and he came out of retirement to lead the cleanup of Pilgrim for Holtec International, which bought Pilgrim several years ago for, and get this, $1,000.
A lot of us have stepped up to the challenge to decommission the site. We made a commitment when we were operating that it would be our responsibility to see this through, and that's really what we're working toward now.
So even if you get a good deal on it, why would anybody buy a used shutdown nuclear power plant?
Yeah, I know. It's like, hey, want to buy a used nuclear power plant? Well, the answer is for the money, you know. So they got over $1 billion in a special decommissioning fund. It's sort of like a 401(k) for nuclear reactors. It's been collected over the years from ratepayers. And if Holtec's comprehensive decommission subsidiary can do the cleanup job for less, it gets to keep the difference. So it's about the money.
Wow. And how difficult, though, is it to clean up a nuclear power plant?
It is definitely difficult. It's not for the faint of heart. It's very hard. The site has to be decontaminated down to 3 feet below the surface. And Massachusetts Attorney General made a deal with Holtec that the company would meet much stricter standards than the feds have. And they'd have to keep about $250 million in reserve just in case it didn't have enough money to do the job right.
So where are they in the process right now?
So all the fuel ever used at Pilgrim has been stored in a deep water pool just above the reactor, and now that has to be removed.
All of the fuel ever used at the plant in its whole history, is that a lot? I don't know.
Well, it's a lot and it's a little. Depends on how you look at it. You know, the Department of Energy failed to remove the fuel from nuclear sites and find a permanent place for it. So all of the fuel and all the reactors that have ever been used is still on those sites. And as I say, it's kind of a small amount. There are millions of these tiny pellets of uranium that are mounted in assemblies. And each pellet generates the energy of burning a ton of coal without the carbon waste. So it's really amazing amount of energy that comes out.
And, you know, without that waste, but they become radioactive. So they become waste, right?
Oh, yeah. They're highly radioactive. Some of the particles, the radioactive particles, are harmless, or they're gone in a couple of days, months, even years. But some of the things become really, really, really intensively radioactive. This plutonium-237, it's deadly for tens of thousands of years. And, you know, it could be used for bombs. It could be used to spread over an area, and it could be a dirty bomb. So they have to be taken out of the spent fuel pools very carefully by workers in these protective jumpsuits. And David Noyes described it to me.
The operator on the refuel bridge has a grapple, and it goes down into the spent fuel pool, and it grapples an individual fuel assembly. You can see right here on the picture, there's a fuel assembly being loaded into the multipurpose canister. That's all happening underneath 16 feet of water.
So each one of these stainless steel canisters holds 68 fuel assemblies, and it takes about 3 days to load one of these into a huge concrete cask. In all, there'll be 62 casks, and this is incredible. Each cask weighs more than 350,000 pounds. So they have to be hauled out of the building. They're taken up using a special device called a Goldhofer, which has 80 wheels, and they're taken to a concrete pad. It's about the size of a basketball court. So right now, that's what's happening, and it's called All Casks on Pad. They want to reduce the area that has to be secured with this waste, and then they surround it with these measures to detect and prevent intruders.
Wow. I mean, it's interesting, because I think that we often forget about the security side of this. And so concrete casks, but they must have guards, fencing. What about an attack from above, like an airplane, drone, something like that?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And the NRC has rules. You can't fly drones above these areas, these pads. And I asked Pat O'Brien, he's with Holtec International, and we stood there looking at this pad, and he says, you know, that the massive stainless steel and concrete casks are strong enough to withstand a 9/11 type of attack.
We have simulations where we've flown missiles into these, does not breach the internal canister. We have scenarios where you would take an F-16 loaded with fuel and fly it into it, and they do not breach a canister.
But you know, Arun, critics charge that these casks, no matter how big, they really aren't secure, and that the storage pad, it's near public road, right in plain sight. You can see it. Diane Turco of the group Cape Downwinders told me that she got near the storage area several times.
If I can eyeball those casks, somebody with malicious intent could do some serious damage.
And then there's Mary Lampert. She's head of Pilgrim Watch. And Lampert says she recently received an email from a Pilgrim whistleblower.
A security worker on site told the NRC that there are not enough security workers there now and have not done the training that they claim to have done. That is what the worker said.
Wow, the whistleblower, were you able to get in touch with them? And what's happened with these allegations?
Well, I tried several times. I didn't get a response. I did hear from the Attorney General. She says she's reviewing the charges, and the NRC says they're investigating. But, you know, for now, the cleanup continues, and Holtec International says by Thanksgiving, all the fuel ever used at Pilgrim Nuclear will be in casks and on one pad outside at the Plymouth site.
Oh, Bruce, I have actually had this at the back of my mind as all this other news has been going on. I've been wondering what's going on with this, and you have answered all my questions. Thank you. This has been great.
You're very welcome, Arun.
That's WBUL reporter Bruce Gellerman. Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Governor Charlie Baker says he's talking to other states about how to implement a vaccination identification system here in Massachusetts.
I just happen to think that getting to the point where there's a relatively simple process for people to credential the fact that they've been vaccinated will be important for a whole bunch of reasons.
Baker says his administration has been trying to learn from others' experiences as it works through how a vaccination ID program would be implemented in the Commonwealth. In other news, the state spent more than $4.8 billion on outside contracts and vendors last year. But public data show that Black and Hispanic-owned businesses received barely 0.5% of that spending. Trevor Mados, an economist with the Boston Foundation, says the state should be doing a better job connecting with entrepreneurs of color.
Here in Massachusetts, we actually have a higher density of Black-owned employer firms than we do nationally. So the firms are there. You know, it's not a question of whether or not these firms are out there.
Black and Latino owners run more than 3% of businesses in the state, but just a fraction of them are actually certified as minority contractors able to bid on contracts. Meanwhile, some local activists are disappointed that the Justice Department is appealing the Purdue Pharma bankruptcy settlement plan. The plan was approved by a judge earlier this month. The DOJ says the current plan does not hold Purdue's owners, the Sackler family, accountable for their role in the nation's opioid epidemic. Among those concerned about the DOJ's appeal is Cheryl Jouer of Marlboro, who sits on a committee of unsecured creditors overseeing the bankruptcy. Jouer, whose son died of an overdose 3 months ago, says the appeal will drag out already lengthy litigation and delay the process of getting money to help those dealing with addiction.
And in my opinion, because I just lost my son, I see 250 lives are being lost every single day while this appeal is being held up.
Under the plan, the Sacklers would give up control of Purdue and pay $4 billion in penalties. In exchange, the family would be granted immunity from future legal claims. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo in news, I'm Arun Roth. Be well. Between Zoom meetings and Zoom classrooms, have you and the kids had enough of screen time? Turn off the screen and tune in to the brand new Pinkalicious and Peterific podcast. Join Pinkalicious and her little brother Peter as they sing along to their favorite songs from the hit PBS kids show Pinkalicious and Peterific. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.